gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q3 and 9 months FY24 earnings conference call of Honasa Consumer Limited, hosted by JM Financial Institutional Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Mehul Desai from JM Financial Institutional Securities. Thank you and over to you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of JM Financial Institutional Securities, I would like to welcome you all for 3Q FY24 earnings call of Honasa Consumer Limited. From the management side, we have Mr. Varun Alagh, the co-founder, chairman and CEO of the company, Ms. Ghazal Alagh, co-founder and chief innovation officer, and Mr. Raman Preet Sohi, chief financial officer. I'd like to hand over the call to the management for its opening remarks, and then we can start the Q&A session. Over to you, sir.
Hi, hello everyone. A very good evening to all of you. Thank you so much for joining the call. And I think I'm going to briefly share an update on our quarterly performance, and we will then open it up for your questions. And overall, as a company, we have continued our growth momentum with a 28% year-on-year revenue growth. And especially in this environment, this is something that we believe is significantly disproportionate compared to the industry. Like for like, if you look at our products business, we have grown by 31%. Our operating performance also continues to be robust, and we've delivered an EBITDA of 7.1%, which is almost 400 basis points up year on year. Our 9-month EBITDA has also crossed 100 crores in terms of the 9 months that we have reached. In terms of PAT, again, in line with what we have been talking about, so 26 crores in this quarter, and for the 9 months, it's about 80 crores. And business continues to be capital efficient, right? We have continued to be a negative working capital cycle operation, minus 6 days of working capital. All of this has been possible because of our focus on our three strong core levers. And, first, of course, being purpose-based brand building, and Mamaearth continues to get consumer love. And, over the last 2 years, Mamaearth in the two main categories of for Mamaearth, which is face washes and shampoos, we have gained strong household penetration by 280 basis points in face washes and 110 basis points in shampoos. This is urban plus rural data measured by channel agents. Mamaearth has also shown very strong versatility by entering and making a dent in a new category, color cosmetics, where we had entered close to about 1.5 years back. And in that period, we've actually reached ARR of 150 crores in just the color cosmetics business. And just in quarter three, we have sold 10 lakh units. And this not only demonstrates versatility of the brand, but also demonstrates company's ability to build new categories which require newer capability building, R&D intervention, etc. And I think we're happy we've been able to achieve this feat. We continue to scale our younger brands strongly. And in fact, the great news is that our second brand, the Derma Company, has actually become EBITDA profitable now at a 9-month level. And the brand continues to be EBITDA positive. And that just gives us a lot more confidence as we grow, and that our playbooks on brand building, and as these brands scale, and they will start contributing to the profit pool of the company as well. And the investment allocation strategy that we have is clearly paying off. Of course, the third and very important second one very important lever has been innovation. And, we take pride in our ability to innovate, in our ability to use data science-based trends in capturing what the consumers are looking for. And we've launched almost 122 products in this calendar year. An example of our innovation, data-led innovation approach has been our rosemary hair care range, and where you know, we recognized the trend you know, before the start of this year, and we launched the range towards April, May, and you know, before the hair fall and monsoon season, and actually in just 6 months we've been able to take it to a 50 crore plus ARR, and that that sort of, you know, gives us a lot of joy. And we of course continued to strengthen and expand our omni-channel distribution. In the offline space, basis Nielsen, now we are present in about 1.7 lakh outlets, which is an increase of 37% year-on-year. In modern trade, we are present in almost 8,000 plus stores now across 31 chains. And we also opened our 100 EBO store, which not only helps drive imagery, but also helps us drive a range execution in the physical world. And so the three boring levers of building brands, providing innovative products, and driving distribution have been fundamental to delivering the growth plans that we have had. And we have done this keeping our purpose-based philosophy in mind. And our all our plans around you know, planting more trees, providing more safe drinking water, recycling more plastic. And we continue to add to those seeds. And we, in fact, very soon will come with our sustainability report as well in terms of the impact that some of these plans are making. And we continue to strongly focus on, you know, governance and with our strong internal and external audit partners. And we take pride in the fact that we have a diverse organization. 53% of the you know, employees, you know, employees are women. And we were also recognized as a great place to work fourth year in a row, with our focus on engaging our employees in the right way and providing them the right development and learning opportunities. So that's basically you know, the highlights of what we want to capture in our quarterly results. Would love to answer the questions that you might have. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to only use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have a first question from the line of Vivek M. from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, Varun and team. A few questions. First, and in fact, a request, you know, Varun and Raman, if presentation can include, you know, a bit more data on, you know, let's say online, offline, a bit more data on, let's say, the brands, that will be really helpful to analyze the performance, if you can take that suggestion on board.
We will evaluate that.
Sure. Now, coming to the, you know, to the questions, first is online, offline, can you just, you know, give some insights into how the quarter had been for both these channels?
I think both the...
I'm sorry, sir, you're not audible.
The quarter has been good. And online... Sorry, can you hear me, Vivek? And everyone else?
We can hear you now, sir. Please go ahead.
Got it. Yeah, so to answer the question, one, both the channels have grown well. But online has grown stronger, faster than offline for the company. And in terms of brands, younger brands have grown strongly in the online space, right? While growth for Mamaearth continues to be driven from the offline space. And so that's how the status.
Okay, and in terms of growth rates for the key brands, Varun?
So, from our growth rates on key brands, and our younger brands, of course, have a lower base and are growing much more strongly. And which we talked about last time as well. And, but Mamaearth also continues to lead the pack from a perspective of larger brands. And it is in double-digit value and in mid-teens volume growth.
Perfect. Got it. Second, because you know you are still a very young company from a market perspective, sequentially, how is the seasonality? So if I look at, you know, this quarter, there is a quarter-on-quarter decline. The base also, there's a quarter-on-quarter decline. Does that mean the second quarter is bigger than the third quarter? I would have imagined given the, you know...
Yes, it does mean it.
Sure. Please.
Yes, actually, we do have some bit of seasonality in the business, and because our largest categories continue to be face wash, sunscreens, and followed by shampoo, you know, in order of seasonality, sunscreens show the highest seasonality, followed by face wash, followed by shampoo, and which is why usually half one is where you know, for us the seasonality is higher compared to half two, and where winter sort of kicks in, and this time the winter portfolio itself also wasn't as you know, exciting in terms of the winter demand. The winter was delayed, and some of that impact was there. In general, and given the contribution of our categories, we do have some seasonality.
Got it. A couple of more.
Best to look at it from a year-on-year perspective. Sorry.
Got it. A couple of more, if I may. One is the gross margins, which have, you know, contracted both on a YOY and QOQ basis. Can you just give insights other than channel mix? Is there anything else, and where should this settle at in the foreseeable future?
Actually, like, channel mix is not the core reason. Good you ask this question. Give this chance to clarify. So, the gross margin contraction is more so. For example, there are two reasons. One, at a YTD level, if you see, we have the impact of Momspresso, which used to be, because it was largely a people oriented business, and high OPEX but little high gross margin as well, and so that is there in the base, and that's, if you remove the impact of it, and from a 9 month perspective, there is only about 15 basis points different in gross margin, right, on a product business. And even there, and one of the things which is specifically happened in this quarter, right, which we will of course learn and be better at as we move on, and, is that while we were taking provisions for our expiry, etc., in every quarter, and we chose to do the destruction of the same for the last three quarters in this quarter itself, because of which all of that sort of came into just this quarter, which should have ideally been divided into the last three quarters. And so this quarter is a little more depressed because of that. And so I think if you look at the YTD levels, that's really the gross margin level, which we are at, and that is what you should expect from us as we move forward.
Okay, got it. And Varun, I noticed, you know, on the volume growth side, so let's say Mamaearth has, let's say, 200 milliliter of shampoo bottle, and let's say 3.5-4 gram of, let's say, lipstick. When you report volume growth, does that mean that, you know, one shampoo bottle is same as one lipstick, for example? Because your volume growth says that it is on the number of packs. Is that correct?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And we treat volume growth as transactions growth, right, which is a number of units. And because in the beauty and personal care business, like you've absolutely rightly pointed, and not even 2.5 gram lipstick can be more expensive than a 200-250 ml you know, shampoo. And hence, tonnage and kgs is not the right way to measure and add them all up. To see, especially if you're building skincare and color cosmetics as a business. And so we see transactions growth as the right you know, measure of volumes. And there we've actually grown faster than our value.
Interesting. Okay, got it. And last question, Varun, since we have the opportunity to hear it from you, there have been obviously investor concerns around this issue of inventories, in the channel, etc. And I'm sure, investors, analysts would have reached out to you. But can you just, give your views as to, on the distribution side, how comfortable things are on the ground and whatever the reports, came about, any clarification on that will be useful. That's my last one.
Sure. So Vivek, I think to sort of talk about it, I will need to set some context for everyone out there. So we started operating in this channel about 3.5 years ago, and when we started going offline, especially GT, and when when you're building a new business in GT, you're really going to partners with no ongoing business, that led to the kind of partners that we were able to attract at that point of time was not the best quality partners. And the second thing that of course happened was when we were doing that, right, we were largely an online company, right? And hence our distribution center was largely one mother warehouse from which we were operating. And while to service the general trade distribution system, you need far more number of distribution points, right, which we could not sort of, just open up, directly. And hence, what we did was we went in for a super stockist model, whereby we appointed super stockists as bulk breakers, and who would then service our sub-distributors. They also solved the problem of supplying to smaller, lower quality sort of, let's say, distribution partners who might have had credit risk. That said, over time, as our business size increased, that layer has led to significant, relatively higher inventory compared to others, FMCGs that we operate, because they are really our inventory bulk breakers, and the contribution of that also increased. And of course, there is a cost associated with it. We pay 5% extra to a super stockist to sort of, manage this. As we speak, I think we are undergoing that transition where, one, we want to improve the quality of our distributors, right? Given this is a channel for growth for us, right? And hence, there is financial infusion which will be required by our partners, right? As well as they need to have stronger capabilities on deploying the technology products that we want to deploy for significantly better visibility of assortment, sales, etc. Now that whole attempt of changing and churning some of this did cause some pain, and whereby certain associations did raise concerns, and we're actively addressing and working with the system. And, that said, we believe it's structurally the right thing to do, and which is finding the right partners over time and actually deploying them with better manpower, capital, as well as better technology capabilities. And, over the next 3 to 4 quarters, we'll continue to engage and work with the system, whereby we will make sure that both the quality of partners, right, as well as the inventory levels in the system, and sort of continue to move in the right direction.
Perfect. Thank you for the elaborate answer. Wish you and your team all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a next question from the line of Latika Chopra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question was, if you could share the ARRs for the Derma Company and Aqualogica. I think you shared it in the prior quarter at about 380 crores and 180 crores respectively. Any updates on that, please?
Yeah, no, those were the numbers that we had shared last month. As we make material gains in these, I think we will surely come back and share. Because ARRs, benchmarks, ideally we would like them to be materially different when we actually come back and share with you. Right? So currently they have grown sequentially, then but there's no material sort of difference from those numbers. And hence, we would surely, as they hit newer benchmarks, we will come back and share.
Sure. The second was, I know you mentioned, in your response to gross margins that there was an adjustment for 9 months that you made in this quarter, right, in terms of stock write-offs probably. So should we now look at the 9 month gross margin as a realistic gross margin of 69.7, or is it like going to be the third quarter of 68.5, which is more realistic? And do you see any risk to this from a product mix perspective, or the offline online channel mix or brand mix going forward?
Yeah, so I'll take that, Latika. So like you said, I think the first 9 month gross margin profile is representative. Having said that, of course, the big implication going forward could be a significant change in the channel mix, which of course, as we speak, I think, the online, offline growth mix will sort of balance it. So I think at least in the sort of medium term, we don't see any major change in how our gross margin profile is going to shift.
And from a 9 month perspective, the only bit of adjustment is that 20 basis points odd, right? Which is an account of the office space. So I think outside of that, right, that 69% is the gross margin that we should expect us to deliver as we move forward.
All right. And, any flavor on, how should we think about, brand advertisement expenses, on a YOY basis as a percentage of revenue? I've been pretty stable at 34-ish kind of percent. There is some benefit of 40 basis points or as I can see on your deck. But where do you think this is going to settle at basis the plans that you have? And lastly, would it be possible for you to share the offline-online mix? I understood that, online grew faster, but any rough sense on whether the Mamaearth portfolio or on an aggregate basis, any rough sense on online-offline mix? Thank you.
Yeah. Latika, firstly, to the first question, and I'm sorry, I lost the first question.
So this is on the advertisement spends, as a percentage of revenue.
Yeah, got it. Sorry. Thanks for reminding. So Latika, we build an annual plan, like I said, there is a bit of seasonality in the business. There are areas where we want to invest and we invest. So I think from a P&L perspective, we look at it more as a year, and we build an annual plan where we look at how and when we're going to activate which brand, and according to that, we execute. We've been delivering, the gains that we've delivered. Again, we should look at more from a 9 months perspective, because we've delivered it in line with what we had planned them to be. As we move forward, again, we've called out and we continue to support that fact that A&P is the bucket from which we will get the maximum leverage as we grow. We've called out that every year we will continue to improve on our bottom line performance by using that leverage, and where we not only are becoming more efficient, but also the awareness levels are getting driven to a certain level. So I think what I would say is our objective would be that every year in the medium term, we continue to become better on the bottom lines by leveraging on the A&P.
And I think just to add to that, Latika, if you actually look at 9 months, right, it's a 250 bips plus optimization on the A&P side. So like Varun was mentioning, it's about planned budgets and how we sort of invest behind brands. And this, despite as we're building younger brands as well, we've been able to optimize A&P spends during the year.
Sure. And any flavor on online offline mix?
So from an online offline mix perspective, like we said last time, continues to be similar to what we mentioned last time, right? So about more than one third, it continues to come for the overall business from offline, right, while the balance is online. But for a brand like Mamaearth, it's mostly 50-50, is where we see it.
All right. And one thing, if sorry for one more question. I was going through the slides and I noticed that you've mentioned that the online growth has been driven by, you know, platforms with strong tier 2 plus presence. Any red across for tier 1 platforms like Nykaa or, you know, Amazon or anything that you wanted to say about them? This was just flagging
up higher. That point on the that point on the online growth is also far more driven from Mamaearth online growth, right? Where we've seen that, you know, for Mamaearth now the growth is coming more from platforms which have stronger, you know, tier 2 and beyond presence, like, you know, Meesho Purple and Flipkart, right? That's been a learning, at least in the last 9 months. Right? For younger brands, you know, we have seen it to be actually more driven by platforms like Nykaa, Amazon, etc. But at a company level, of course, we're gaining share on each of those platforms.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Manoj Menon from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi team, just heard a little earlier about, you know, the formula which you use for volumes. Just curious, you know, why not use the underlying volume growth formula? But I'm sure you know this template, right? So, you know, just trying to understand why not use EVG, because it kind of, you know, normalizes most of the norms.
So, Manoj, we'll take that as a feedback, right? I think we're fairly young and some of these pieces are things that we are still to take into account and ensure we are able to build it. UVG is a good concept, but it's also, you know, slightly complicated in terms of execution. Currently, our objective was to understand if our consumer transactions are growing. Right? And that's the pulse point we wanted to keep a strong hold of, especially as we also get into B2B businesses. And we wanted to know if the number of times a consumer is engaging with our products is growing. And this current method and actually is a very good demonstrator of that. And so it gives us a very healthy picture of how our brands are doing in terms of driving the consumer interactions and transactions. And, but we'll take this into account and evaluate how we can move towards that.
Thank you. Thank you. And only reason I ask is because of, you know, I have observed in the last 10 years, you know, many Indian companies, listed ones, you know, had actually adopted UVG because they felt, depending on obviously, because of this phase of revolution, because it kind of normalizes, you know, the volumetric aspect, right? I mean, so the point here is, you know, given the stage of growth which you are currently, you started as, let's say, a very high ticket product company to now kind of having the more democratically priced, you know, products. You know, kind of, so that's only context I was trying to ask that. And I mean, we'll come back in a few quarters on, you know, how this evolves. Secondly, on seasonality, you know, 2Q versus 3Q, the skincare portfolio could have benefited of, you know, from seasonality, or is it not material in the portfolio currently?
So in fact, you know, even under skincare, so it depends on what part of skincare forms your largest chunk. So if we were a creams-oriented company, then, you're right. Then, that part of skincare does see positive gains. But even there, in fact, at least our learning has been, it is not the daily creams, but cold creams, moisturizers, which sees a larger sort of skew towards seasonality. But for us, actually, that's the third segment in skin. And the top two segments are face wash and sunscreen, and, which actually see anti-seasonality in Q3.
Very clear, loud and clear. And last year, retail, you know, some updates on the retail, I mean, more than the update actually, you know, just help us understand how do you look at retail internally Is it, let's say, the funding for retail ramp-up comes from your, you know, cash sort of budget, or you are looking at a different channel? You know, any evolution, let's say, over the last 6 months, you know, on your thoughts on retail?
Manoj, I'm assuming you're referring to the EBOs when you're talking about retail?
That's right. Offline EBOs, that's right. Yeah.
Offline EBOs, right. Yes, right. So, you know, I don't think we, and you mentioned CAC budget. I did not understand that point. If you can sort of, you know, just clarify that.
Allow me to give an example of, you know, I was working on a different deepawler project in Unilever long back, where the internal thought process was that, you know, these are actually marketing expenditure, and you would obviously look at this as from a, you know, profits ROC point of view. So are you looking at retail more from a brand building point of view, or is it something, I know these things evolve. That's why I'm just trying to understand where are you in the journey at this point.
No, we are looking not just at retail from a brand building or imagery point of view. In fact, the reason for us to get into the exclusive brand store format was, one, of course, the imagery piece that you talked about, but two, very importantly, and the fact that general trade and modern trade do not allow you to execute your overall assortment, right? They are more hero product kind of channels. And a lot of our consumers were asking for our overall assortment to be seen in one place where they can actually experience and buy more categories. And that was the reason why we started this. And, for us, we are seeing that as a clear business, the way we evaluate all channels from a profitability perspective, that's how we look at this channel. And in fact, all the overall channel already in very nascent stages is store level profitable. And we follow that very strongly, and we believe that as it grows, and the older stores are actually showing much better, store level profitability compared to younger stores. So as a store gets more mature, and it starts to show better sort of bottom line. So I think that's how we're looking at the channel.
Thank you. Just one last.
No, all of them are owned. No franchise DPS.
Thank you. Thank you, team. All the very best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have our next question from the line of Manish Poddar from Invesco Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, just two questions. So first is on the competitive intensity. Could you probably talk about, let's say, competition both from incumbents and new age brands? For the core brand, let's say Mamaearth.
This can be a long answer, right? But I'm
on a relative basis, let's say, because of the entire funding scenario.
Last 3 months, we have seen significantly enhanced competitive intensity. I think, till about 3-4 months back, there wasn't any urban growth concerns that companies were looking at or talking about. But it started with the festive not going as well for the e-commerce players in terms of the overall traffic and growth. It was then sort of, followed by a bleaker winter, in the last quarter, right? And then also parallelly followed by GT, not growing as fast for most companies, right? And consumption in GT slowing down, and hence inventories increasing, etc. That has been the scenario, out there, and which has led to actually a very high discounting that we have seen from most players, be it incumbents or the younger players, right? In terms of number of days of discounts or the steepness of discounts, which have gone up. Our view is this shouldn't last as long, right? And hopefully, post-elections, this environment should completely change and focus on the basic penetration gains, and growth should sort of come back, and hence this need wouldn't be there. But in the short term, we have seen this. And And it does have impact on the consumer and competitive intensity and how one needs to react and, to some of this. So I think that'll be the long answer to it.
So then it is interesting to see the entire growth and the margin perspective. So just one more thing. Could you probably talk about, let's say, distribution expansion for the, you know, Derma company and let's say the other brands, you know, because the first leg you have to build the pipeline and both, let's say, own stores and, you know, the GT channel. But let's say, what are your thoughts of taking these brands, you know, across the channel, that, you know, some of these have started breaking even. So, thank you.
Yeah, so Manish, I think the plan for us is that next year, for example, Dermaco we do see has come to a stage where we are seeing demand in offline stores, and we are more demand oriented in our approach here, and hence taking it slow, right? Because while we can put stock in, if there is no demand, then it won't move out, right? But now last 4 to 5 months, we've actually seen active demand coming, right, especially in pharma channel or in modern trade. So I think this year the objective would be to have a targeted, store strategy, getting into hypers, getting into the right kind of pharma stores for Dermaco and expanding that presence for it. And similarly for other brands, right, we might go very tactically for, you know, let's say one category which is very strong for that brand and take that into selected stores and see how the demand and offtake of shapes and accordingly expand it.
Just one clarity if I can. So would it be right, let's say, for new products under Derma or any of the other new brands, you take the feedback loop from the BA channel which you have for your co-brand?
Well, I did not answer. So you mean that is the first port of distribution are BA channels for Mama?
Yes. For the new brand. I'm just trying to make... Understand, let's say, from a feedback loop.
You're absolutely right. Right? Those are, you know, we have almost 1,000 points where we have VAs, and these VAs feeding data every day to us around what's moving, what's not moving. So these are the places where we do pilots and understand for the new brands what's moving and how it's moving.
And sorry, just to understand it. So for this the entire Derma product company, products would have already started, you know, getting, let's say, rolled out across this BA distribution channel, or, you know, that just on NPD basis?
No, actually, it's, you know, we never take NPDs into offline, Manish. We only would take our core products of a brand in offline, where we are seeing significant traction and which have become large in the online space, right? For example, Dermaco face serums, salicylate, kojic, vitamin C, niacinamide have become large in the online space, or the sunscreen, which is the 1% hyaluronic, has become large in the online space. And those would be the products that, face washing again, so those would be the products that we would lead, our offline distribution with. And that we would do in the BA channels as well, that we would do in the right imagery modern trade stores as well. And, but like I said, we always start with a certain universe, see the response there, and then expand in that channel's universe.
Got it. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Mudit M. from M3 Investment. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity and really appreciate the consumer brands that you're building. My first question is, can you help us understand what's the growth on the base business by the new new launches? So I just want to understand X new launches, while we appreciate the nimbleness of coming up with new products, but is the base also getting built and there is attraction there?
Yeah. Hi. Yes, the base has also seen good growth. And so we've seen double-digit volume growth on base as well for us.
Right. So if to drill down that even further, how many of the, because you're expanding your store network very fast, but for an outside investor, it's very difficult to understand how much of this is coming from the new stores getting added and how much is from the repeat orders from the distributors. So could you help us qualitatively understand, is there a growth in the repeat salience of the business also? In GT?
In like GT, it's a bit difficult to track at this kind of size. In terms of, but our, for example, our BA stores continue to grow at the same store level, right? As well as if you look at Nielsen data, it is also telling us that same store growth is there as well as distribution growth is there. So finally, the growth that is coming for us in offline is combination of both. And it is not that one is at the cost of other. And both same store is growing as well as distribution expansion is adding to the growth.
So just pushing the last two small questions, can you help us explain the percentage of repeat orders on your own website, because that you have put in your RHP, so what's the traction like in 9 months?
So honestly, I think we've talked about this in the past as well, and as a brand,
I'm sorry,
right, where our products are listed on our website, and you know, hello, yes, may I continue?
Yes, please, sir.
Yeah. So I'm saying as a cross-channel brand where our products are present not just in our own B2C but also on Amazon Nykaa or in a DMart Apollo or in a GT store near, we've always talked about the fact that, you know, the same consumer, you know, ends up buying from cross channels, and hence we're not able to truly triangulate what the repeat sale of that consumer is. And, but we have disclosed that, you know, almost 55% of our sales is coming from repeat consumers on our D2C platform. And that has actually gone up to about 58% now. And so, but continues to be in that zone.
Just to push in one small last question, do you get any differential pricing from e-commerce channel or is it the same that everyone else enjoys?
So in fact, we would be the most, the most commonly treated in terms of players, because we operate as sellers on these websites. And when you operate as sellers, you're basically operating with the same framework that Amazon has put out for any seller in the country. Of course, that framework has slabs where as you increase in size, you can get better sort of, you know, logistic cost or better. But finally, we are going by that same framework that Amazon or Flipkart have created for any seller in the country. Most other companies operate in a B2B model, and where there is less transparency, but in our model, right, it is actually very transparent in terms of the cost that they apply.
That's great. Could you also recommend, sorry, operator, if I can see one more, could you also suggest how much is in the marketing goes in performance, and qualitatively speak, how much goes in performance marketing and vis-a-vis the other brand building activities?
Mudit, what I would say is, you know, while we're calling it performance marketing, it finally is consumer marketing. Just because I serve the consumer from Facebook and with the advertisement where I'm trying to capture what kind of sales it generated, and we call it measured marketing rather than performance marketing. And that's the form of marketing probably 10 years down the line will only exist. And hence, it's just a form of digital tool and marketing available. We focus more on the content, the messaging, what we are sort of, you know, communicating with the consumer. Otherwise, all of this marketing is also consumer marketing, and that's how we at least like to look at it.
Thanks. Okay, thanks for the kind answer and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have our next question from the line of Latika Chopra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the follow-up opportunity. When I heard your comments, you talked about some of the pressure coming on urban discretionary. It could as well be cyclical, but just wondering, we had this aspiration of, 30% growth, for the year. Obviously, you're tracking so far, around those numbers. But if you have to, crystal gaze over the next 2-3 years, where would you peg, the revenue growth potential for the aggregate business? I also heard comments around, you were looking for a more tactical expansion into other channels for your new brands. So any rough sense on, whether the revenue growth trajectory is more going to be like 20 to 25% or 25 to 30, where do you think at this point, the next 3 years revenue growth potential for the business looks like?
Latika, we have, whenever we have talked about this in the past, we've talked about the fact that we will continue to grow significantly ahead of the industry peers. We would still retain that as our goal. We've talked about the fact that we would be at a 2 to 2.5x of where the market growth would be. And that's where we will continue to be. In the very near term, we do expect consumption slowdown, and we're seeing some of that. Where you can see industry is also reporting fairly slow sort of, volume value growth numbers. And that, is now happening in urban as well, not just in the rural area. So from a short-term perspective, there the market, the growth benchmark might itself be on the lower side. That might impact us in the short term as well, right? But from a medium term perspective, which is over the next 3 years, I think that goal of remaining 2 to 2.5x of the market continues to be there. And I think we would look at around that 20% CAGR mark, and because that's the way we see market shaping as well.
Sure. And any thoughts on further brand launches, or you will first want to scale up the existing portfolio that you have and then look at a new brand launch into any of the white spaces that you see in the BPC space?
Latika, it's an ongoing process for us where we identify opportunities which are white spaces, and we action pilots and POCs in that opportunity, and wherever we see that our view and hunch was right, we double down on that opportunity. So I think and we've also created an organization which can easily support that, because we have a separate brand factory team which works on only new brand creation and scale up while the COE focusing was on the core brands. So I think in that line, we will continue to look at newer spaces, coming up with the right mixes to take on those spaces and build newer engines of growth for future through those trends and spaces.
So, one of the things that you flagged off was Color Cosmetics, right? It's already 150 crore ARR under Mama Earth brand. So you want to tap into this category via Mama Earth, the brand itself, or the success of this specific portfolio within Mama Earth allows you to look at a bigger, a bigger target audience at different price points using another brand? Is that something that could be on plate?
Yes, right. The experience with the category has clearly given us more confidence to be able to look at it, in a standalone manner. We know that, globally as well as in India, naturals is a very small part of color cosmetics of the category. Performance is where the category really lies. But this this early success has clearly helped us build capabilities and given us confidence that we can play aggressively in that category in the medium term.
Sure. And one check on margins, you know, EBITDA margins, you know, hovering around 7.3, you know, 9 months, even in this quarter. Given, you know, we talked to you, you alluded to higher competitive intensity in general, how should one think about, you know, the time frame for you to reach, you know, double-digit kind of a margin profile?
Again, Latika, we will stick from a 2 to 3 year perspective. We will stick to what we have said in the past. We will continue to gain every year. And hopefully over the next 3 years, we should be in the double digit space.
All right. And last one from me was, you know, any is new NPD share, you know, to revenue ratio stable at 13% that you saw in first half? And you've talked about, you know, market shares and face washes and shampoos. Are they also trending up on a QOQ basis? I know you shared YOY they have expanded. So any flavor of that will be useful. Thank you.
So, yes, on the first point, largely, yes, stable. And honestly, it should be looked at from a quarter bench perspective because we launch sort of, you know, there is cumulative gains that we usually get. And but yeah, stable from an NPD perspective. And, on the market share front, again, I would say better to see it from a YOY perspective, although we've sequentially also gained, but better to see it from a YOY perspective because, you know, that's really, you know, the benchmark. So that's the data that we have provided. So, but it's actually healthy compared to what we have reported in the past and sequential as well.
Sure. Thank you so much, Val.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Chintan Sheth from Girik Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, team, for the opportunity. And just to understand better, the gross margin, you say 20 bps on the 9 month basis is the impact on the inventory front, right? Just a clarification.
No, we'll try to explain the Raman.
Yeah. So I think the hi Raman is right. So what we're trying to say is that if you look at a 9 month year-on-year comparison from a gross margin perspective, and if you exclude the impact of discontinued business Monspresso in the base, then the impact of you know, gross margin year-on-year is only 15 to 20 bps, and that's primarily coming in from certain category mix or a channel mix changes. And so that's what you're trying to explain then.
Okay.
So just on the Q3 perspective, friend, the same number on a YOY, even after removing the impact of Monspresso, and is 120 basis.
Yeah. So I think the impact of that one, you know, the accumulated inventory impact that we took in Q3 is about 1.24% for the quarter, and ideally it should be spread across the first three quarters. So you can probably assume that it's a 0.3-0.4 impact.
Better, yeah.
So that's how one should look at it.
Okay, that's X of Monspresso, right? We need to...
That's X of Monspresso, yeah. So there is no Monspresso impact in the current quarter. Whatever is the impact is in the base quarter. Hence, if we remove that from the base quarter, like for like, year on year, 9 months, there is only 15-20 bips impact. Correct. And specifically for Q3 is the inventory one-time accumulated impact that we've taken in this. So that's...
Sure. And in terms of the employee cost, last quarter was favorable, and this quarter we have kind of normalized. What we can expect going forward? Are we continue to see some trend up in that, or there will be some leverage we can expect at least on an absolute basis? Whether we can expect the run rate to continue or grow at a near inflation or lower than the sales growth, that's one that we should expect.
Just to clarify, so I think when you look at like for like
Here also, given MomStresser was a service business and had implications from our employee payroll cost, the like-for-like impact is only 1% year-on-year. And in fact, that's in Q3, that's also similar, close to 100 basis points impact. So that's how you should see it. I think we are at about 9%. And we, I think going forward also, we should remain around the same, as a percentage of sales in terms of our payroll cost.
Okay. It will grow in line with the revenue growth. If you consider 9%, that it means the employee cost will grow in tandem with the sales growth. That's the expectation currently.
Over the next couple of years, at least, yes.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, in the near term.
Right. And lastly, on the depreciation and interest cost this quarter, I believe the ramp up which we have seen, largely because of the EBOs, ramping up and impacting the P&L, or is there any specific you need to call out?
No, it's just the EBOs. There is, we don't have any other. Capital intensive.
Mostly lease accounting getting impacted there.
Absolutely, it's exactly that.
And that trend will continue. The absolute will grow in tandem with the number of EBOs will continue to open.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. And if you can just call out, you said Mamaearth brand as a whole grew double digits, right? That's the number you. In terms of revenue value growth and mid-teen in terms of volume growth, correct?
Yes.
That is for 9 months.
Yeah.
For the 9 months.
YTD, yes.
Oh, okay. Got it. Sure. Thanks. All the best.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Sahil Chotalia from Mount Bliss Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so all my questions are answered. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mudit M. from M3 Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for allowing me to ask your questions. Could you also take this as a note or maybe give some highlight? Like, for you must have categorized some hero products and what's the growth on those hero products? If you could highlight those in subsequent quarters, it would be good to understand the longevity of franchise. And I would like to know the comments on the same. Then I'll ask you the question. Sorry.
Mudit, at least as we stand today and we realize the way market is shaping, and beauty and personal care as a market is a very innovation driven, trend oriented market, and where especially in online, which is the large majority of our business, and fresh innovations and launches is what fuels consumers' excitement and gets you the consumer franchise going. And, in that sense, and for a 90% offline business, and it actually makes far more sense to just talk about and focus on hero products. And, but for our kind of business, which is far more online heavy, and, innovation and how innovation continues to add and drive growth is a far more important metric that we track. And of course, we have hero product franchises like Upton, Onion, and, which are all fairly large franchises, and the GT growth that we are talking about or the market share gains that we are talking about are driven by these franchises. And, but we still feel innovation is a far more important in our business, because that's how the category sort of operates.
I really appreciate. But just to get sense, to also understand your GT strategy and the quality of GT networks. So how many of the distributors that you have enrolled are already existing distributors of large franchises, maybe in adjacent categories or same? So that gives the confidence that they have financial benefit and customer touch points.
Mudit, as I talked about earlier, you know, we're a young business in GT, and when initially you go to find a partner and you don't have any business, you do not attract the highest quality partners in the market. And that's what sort of, you know, earlier happened to us as well, where we were working with a lot of local cosmetic, FMCG players, baby product sort of distributors. And it's only over the last 1 year where business has become sizable is when we have actively started moving towards the FMCG distributors, as we would call them, and who've been working with larger FMCG companies and are now interested in working with us. And that that's an active transition that we are going through. And I think over the next 4 to 5 quarters, our objective is that 80 to 85% of our distribution partners should be of that, you know, of that variety, as you call it. And, that's the ongoing strategy that we have.
Maybe last one from my side. How many SKUs do you carry in the modern trade, large modern trade businesses, marketplaces? Because that's where the real mass consumption could drive for your business. Just want to get sense of what's the SKU that you could carry in modern trade.
Yeah. Differs, but in general, like a DMart would have probably 20 odd SKUs for us, right? Even Apollo would have a similar number, right? But then possibly in a hyper store of Reliance, where we have a partnership to do a stronger brand block, right? Along with assisted sales, right? We might have 70 to 80 SKUs in that kind of store, right? So depending upon the format, the customer, and the intervention that we've been able to align, it varies. But in general, about 20 is what you should
expect. Thanks. Really great, and appreciate your candid approach on the answers. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining in. We are a young company. We are really happy to sort of, you know, answer some of these questions and engage with you on different times to further strengthen how we will build this business going forward. And we are super kicked and excited with the beauty and personal care opportunity as it exists and will shape over the next decade. And, we continue to very strongly believe that it is going to be the strongest and fastest growing FMCG segment, right, with the highest profit pools, and especially driven by women joining workforce and more women going to college as a trend. And, we believe we genuinely excel at building for Gen Z and millennials, and that excellence on innovation and brand building in that sense will continue to drive strong gains for the company in the long term. Thank you so much for patiently listening to us.
Thank you. On behalf of JM Financial Institutional Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.